The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
2 weeks after the election in November 2020, they published a 70-page document that's publicly available to anybody that's watching this that wants to review it, that goes through in detail the involvement of Hunter Biden and the Biden family with knowledge of a deal that was being struck between CFC buying a $9 billion stake in the U.S.-sanctioned, Russian-controlled by Putin energy company, and writing a $9 billion check. They weren't a silent partner and, you know, we're going to put $9 million or $90 million or $900 million. They were buying a $9 billion stake, approximately 14% of Rosneft. Once again, U.S.-sanctioned, Putin-controlled Russian energy company. And Hunter Biden and the Biden family were right in the middle of all of that. But if you go back to October 2020 and then into the November 3rd election, the election was decided by 21,500 votes. And what does that mean? Three states, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. The difference between President Trump and Joe Biden was 43,000 votes. If half of those people, 21,500, had voted for President Trump instead of Biden, President Trump would still be in the White House. So that election was decided by 21,500 votes in the backdrop of a story that is the most suppressed story in the history of a U.S. presidential election.
So if we now know that that story was suppressed by a federal agency, the FBI, our biggest law enforcement agency, then how did the FBI not affect the election outcome? It sounds like the election was, I'll just say it, rigged in part by the FBI.
It was. So you can call it rigged, you can call it stolen, you could call it suppressed. The American people can call it whatever they want. But the fact pattern is the FBI alone altered history in that election. And Tim Tebow, in his last discussion with my legal counsel, was, listen, we know Tony's cooperating. We appreciate all the information he's provided. We will follow up with you. We're definitely going to have him come in for a follow-up interview or spend some more time on this. And I haven't heard from him since.
At all?
No. Nor have my lawyers.
No communication whatsoever?
No.
Since before the 2020 election?
Correct.
That's shocking.
Shocking, yeah, that would be one adjective. So when the New York Post ran their article, an individual named Andy Stone stepped in. I think he runs their compliance or fact-checking department and throttled down the fact pattern. The interesting thing with that, Tucker, is Andy Stone never reached out to me. He never called my lawyers. My email address was there. I'm easy to get a hold of. Facebook never reached out to me and said, hey, Tony, we see that this email that the New York Post just published to you, is it real? Can you produce the email to us? Within 5 minutes, if Twitter, Facebook, anybody else had reached out, I would have produced the email with, everyone wants to talk about the metadata. Oh, the emails that are being produced don't have any metadata. I would have given them the metadata that's pages along on that email that that the New York Post published. And just the amount of information here is staggering.
And the FBI took possession of that information.
They did. I don't know where it went.
Would you speak to the FBI again?
I'd be happy to.
At any time?
At any time. Not just the FBI, the U.S. attorney. I mean, these facts are extensive, well-documented, easily verified. This is history-altering facts. Debate with anybody. Put me in a room with anybody that claims anything I've said, any document I've produced is altered or fabricated. I'd love that challenge.
He'll speak to anyone, as he says there. But as you also learned, if you saw that interview on Tuesday night, nobody's talking to him except Tucker. Tucker will sit down with him. And here, even since the laptop has been proven to be Hunter's, it's got all of the Biden crime family interactions. Still, Nobody will talk to Tony Bobulinski. 2 years on. He had the sit down with Tucker 2 years ago. And now here we are coming up to the midterms. He's there. He's available. And still, they blot it out. And notice, they're all in on it. Big tech. He mentioned Facebook, Twitter, the FBI, media, big media. Obviously, the Democrat Party. They're all in on the steal. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on this travel day for so many in God's church as we make our way all over the place to go where God has placed his name. The Feast of Tabernacles is now upon us, or it will be on Sunday night. Quite a few substitutes lined up over the next week and a half. We had a great program yesterday, Richard Palmer, more like a documentary style program. If you haven't seen that, the title is Secrets of Hitler's Mountain Fortress. He was over in Vienna and Austria, Germany a couple weeks ago, was able to get quite a lot of footage, and then he brought that back and he worked with it to produce a real, just an excellent show. He pitched the idea a few weeks back, in fact, and it just shows you how effective some of these videos can be, especially if you have some time to go and get the footage that you need and to plan the script and that sort of thing. I wish we had that kind of time for each of these daily shows, but we do have a top-notch research team that does put a lot of things in my inbox and on my desk every morning, every evening as well. So we're appreciative of all the efforts that go into this this daily production. So this interview, Tuesday night, Tucker and Tony Bobulinski. Listen again, here's Bobulinski telling, he's talking about the messages or the communications that he's had with the Bidens. Clip number 7.
There are hundreds of data points that Joe Biden was acting in a capitalistic term, I would say, the chairman. Effectively, that was Joe Biden's role in the Biden family business ventures and around the world. There was a text message where I was early on having discussions with Hunter about, you know, what is CFC focused on and Chairman Yi? Are they doing any deal or what kind of deals? And Hunter, in a very long text message, just says, you know, we're willing to do any deals, except I think he excluded, you know, military tech that would give the Chinese military an advantage over the United States military. But outside of that, they were ready and willing to do any other deal.
What's astounding in all of this is when you consider what they go after Donald Trump for, they still haven't gotten anything to stick. But remember the dual strategy here. Firstly, it's get Trump. Whether you're talking big tech, the propagandists in the media, the FBI, the DOJ, the deep state. Number one objective, get Trump. And then the second objective, cover up your own crimes. Cover up your own criminality. Where are there patriots in big media that would say, wait, hang on a second. He's willing to do any deal except maybe a straight up military deal with the CCP of all things, the Communist Chinese Party. It's easily proven. Put the Hunter laptop together with all the communications that Bobulinski himself has. And he says he's willing to sit down still with the FBI. But they give him that one interview, 5 hours, a couple weeks before the November 3rd election. And then that's it. The FBI says to him, we'll get back to you. They never did. Timothy Tebow never did get back to him. This is from Miranda Devine at the New York Post. It says, Tony Bobulinski was interrupted while he was being interviewed by the FBI 11 days before the 2020 presidential election by a mysterious phone call from the president's brother, Jim Biden, who may have suspected that his business partner was threatening Joe Biden's candidacy by dishing the dirt on the family's China deals. So you add to the mystery intrigue here. When he is finally interviewed by the FBI for 5 hours, he gets a phone call from Jim Biden, who is the fake president's brother. And he was, of course, involved in all of these deals with China. Unbelievable. says here, the missed phone call at 1:37 p.m., October 23rd, 2020. Easily proven. Just look on the phone history. October 23rd, 2020 came as Bobulinski was telling two FBI agents that Joe Biden stood to earn a 10% cut of his son Hunter and brother Jim's lucrative joint venture with Chinese energy firm CEFC. I mean, they know the energy firm. They know that the cut that he got, 10%. He's the big guy, as Bobulinski confirmed 2 years ago. And the media, they're completely silent. Talk about criminal behavior. They're all traitors, aren't they? Of course they are. Get Trump and then cover the crimes of the Communist Party here in the United States. It says here, Bobulinski disclosed the call in an interview with Tucker Carlson to be aired on Fox News Tuesday night. That's from Miranda Devine the other day at the New York Post. Listen to one more clip from that interview on Tuesday, clip five.
It's a very strange document, and I hope you can explain it. This is a limited liability company agreement of BYZ Holdings LLC. And this is from August 2nd of 2017, 3 months later. The reason this is strange is this document is identical down to the serial numbers on the bottom of the page to this document, the Sinohawk Holdings agreement, except it's got a different company name. Yeah. What is this?
That document is exactly the same document as Sinohawk Holdings LLC. And it appears that Hunter Biden, Jim Biden, and the Biden family literally copied the same document down to typos, as you said, the serial number, and they removed Oneida Holdings, which was the Delaware LLC that represented Jim Biden, Hunter Biden, myself, Rob Walker, and James Gillier, and Hunter and his lawyer, George Mazeres, replaced it with Owasco, which was Hunter Biden's law firm or business that he operated. So he effectively swapped out an entity that he owned 20% of to a business that he owned 100% of, which is fraud.
Which is fraud, Bobulinski says there at the end. And the propagandists, they could care less about the fraud perpetuated by this crime family. They're all in on it. Joe Biden, Jim Biden, Hunter Biden. Who can forget what Joe Biden said in the run-up to the stolen election 2 years ago? This is clip six.
My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy. He's the only one. Nobody else has made money from China.
Where's the evidence? This guy being the bad orange man. Get Trump. He's the one that made money from China. There's no evidence, he would say, the media would say, the media still says, I guess, that the Biden crime family got nothing from the CCP. All of the details so easily proven. So these are all the same people that say that the election was just perfect. The New York Times, by the way, they had a story on Monday of this week. This is the headline: how a tiny elections company became a conspiracy theory target. They went after this election. I think they produce machinery for elections. And the New York Times is there, Johnny on the spot, to debunk all of the conspiracies, saying that the machines were flawed or there were glitches. And the New York Times comes out on Monday. Listen to this. You can't make this up. On Monday, the New York Times has this: how a tiny elections company became a conspiracy theory target. The next day, Tuesday, here's the headline: election software executive arrested on suspicion of theft. It's the same company. So the guy that heads up the company, he's a crook, or at least he's arrested on suspicion of crooked behavior. And the day before, the New York Times says, hey, this company's perfect. You cannot make this up. This is an editor's note on the Monday article. It says, after this article was published, the chief executive of Connect was arrested on suspicion of theft of personal information about poll workers. Then the next day, the article says, Connect, which is based in Michigan, develops software to manage election logistics like scheduling poll workers, says Los Angeles County is among its customers. The company has been accused by groups challenging the validity of the 2020 presidential election with storing information about poll workers on servers in China. Says the company has repeatedly denied keeping data outside the U.S., including in recent statements to the New York Times. It says Mr. Gascon's office said its investigators had found data stored in China. Holding the data there would violate Connect's contract with the country. The contract with the county. So they lied. They're liars. They're thieves. They steal elections. It's unbelievable. Speaking of the stolen election, I've played montages before of Democrats who challenged the legitimacy of 2016 because their candidate didn't win. And so they said Donald Trump was a fraud. They said he was illegitimate. They said he cheated. They said the Russians gave him the victory, not the American people. Stacey Abrams recently said that she never challenged the election from 2018, her gubernatorial election, where she lost. And then if you remember, if you have a memory that can go back at least more than 2 seconds, you remember that she's an election denier. She should be in jail. She should be in prison. She's perpetuating the big lie. Listen to this. This is put together by the RNC. Listen to this montage of just Stacey Abrams, clip two.
I have never denied the outcome.
Then I do have one very affirmative statement to make. We won.
But I didn't lose. I got the votes. But we won't know exactly how many because of how they cheated.
I did win my election. I just didn't get to have the job.
We were robbed of an election.
Using the word rigged, using the word steal, do you think it's dangerous going into 2020?
I don't, because we can actually back it up.
And so in response to what I believe was a stolen election, and I'm not saying they stole it from me, they stole it from the voters of Georgia.
I spent the interim 10 days between the election and my non-concession day, as we call it. In fact, someone outside asked if I'm ever going to concede. The answer is no.
It was not a free and fair election. I think the election was stolen from the people of Georgia.
I believe it was stolen from the voters. I just said it can't happen again.
Thousands of Georgians had their voices stolen because they were not able to cast ballots, and they cannot be guaranteed that their votes will be counted in 2020 if we don't do this right.
I said that the election was stolen from the Georgia voters.
If it looks like it's cheating, it probably is. If it looks like it's rigged, it probably is.
The process that took place during the legislative cycle was one that did not countenance and did not pay attention to the deep and real concerns of those who watched this election be stolen in the state of Georgia.
It was stolen from the voters of Georgia. We do not know what they would have done because not every eligible Georgian was permitted to participate fully in the election.
And then last week she says, I never denied the outcome of that 2018 loss, her loss to Brian Kemp. She says, I never denied the outcome. And then look at all the tape. Over and over again. It was stolen. I still haven't conceded. No way. If it looks like cheating, it probably is. No room for that kind of dialogue today, is there? Certainly not. If you even talk about it, chances are you're one of them MAGA Republicans, and you probably should be in jail. Because you're an election denier. And that led to January 6th, the insurrection, where they tried to overthrow the government. So many lies. So much deception. Last night on Tucker, this might have been, I can't remember if it was last night or a few nights ago, but he's following up on the Nord Stream pipeline. Explode. And speaking of Russia, by the way, read this article by Jeremiah Jacques came out last night as a trumpet brief. Vladimir Putin, evil on the level of Joseph Stalin. Some excellent history here about Vladimir Putin. He's not finished. He not by a long shot. Go through that article. There's no denying, obviously, just how ruthless and murderous the spirit is coming out from Vladimir Putin's dictatorial reign. He is a complete and total tyrant through and through. And some of the crimes in Ukraine, again, undeniable. But that said, as Tucker has asked, does that mean he's responsible for blowing up his own pipeline into Europe? Why would he do, and if so, why? I told you on, I think it was last week or maybe it was Monday's show. I lose track, but John Brennan. He was the one that first came out and said, yeah, it was probably Putin that did it. And then now, as you'll see here in a moment, now they're all saying it. And as I said last time, if John Brennan says it's Russia, chances are it's probably not Russia who blew up the pipeline. Listen to this from Tucker last night, clip three.
How does this fit into Putin's playbook? Of course, as you would expect, Susan, Russia says, oh, we had nothing to do with this. We're going to launch an investigation. But come on.
Look, the indications are that foul play was involved and that it appears that, you know, Russia is certainly the likeliest suspect of this.
I think this is clearly an act of sabotage of some sort, and Russia is certainly the most likely suspect. I think this might be just the first salvo of some additional things that might be coming toward Europe.
What Putin is saying to us by blowing up his pipeline is, look, I can blow up a pipeline. If need be, I can blow up the internet cables coming into your country. I can blow up functioning pipelines. I can do all sorts of stuff.
So there's all your talking heads wrapped around John Brennan, who came out with it first. The communists in this government or in this nation saying that the communists over in Russia are responsible for it. We don't know exactly who did it, but the how tired is this Russia did it, Russia's responsible argument. They use it over and over again. Sam emailed me last week after I sent the Brennan clip to him, saying there's just no even original thought with these people. They just keep telling the same lie. Tucker had this guest on last night who pointed out all the lies that have been told about Russia just in the last few years. Listen to this exchange, clip four.
So why is it that everybody is demanding you believe something that's just not very plausible?
It's pretty amazing when you consider the track record of the people who are telling us that Russia did this. They're the same ones who told us that Russia installed Trump in the White House and blackmailed him with a P-tape, who told us that Russia placed bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan, that Russia was injuring U.S. diplomats with supersonic microwave weapons, and that Russia invented the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop. And we're supposed to take now their claims on faith. When, by the way, at the same time, for many years, those who've been opposing the pipeline, including many of those now accusing Russia of blowing it up, have been telling us the reason they're opposed to it is because it gives Russia leverage over Europe by controlling its energy supply. So just think of it logically. Why would Russia blow up its only form of leverage? It does not make any sense.
So leaving aside the pipeline story just for a moment, look at all those fake stories that he noted in passing there. And all of them, every single one, just breathlessly reported by the legacy media. Oh yeah, the bounties on troops. It's true. It's true. Or the microwave story, Hunter's laptop, that's from Russia. Russia installed President Trump. Trump himself is a Russian agent over and over. And now they tell us who blew up the pipeline. Oh, Russia did that. Okay. These people, again, not one original thought. It's like they're just hitting replay over and again. Speaking of Russia and Donald Trump and the election steal, this story, this was, I think, yesterday or the day before. But it's about we've kept our eye, because of Amos chapter 7, we've kept our eye on the Supreme Court. They haven't done much of anything with respect to the election steal or anything surrounding that. But this was from PJ Media yesterday. It says, former President Donald Trump has appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a lower court's decision to allow the FBI and Department of Justice to keep what they claim are classified documents from the hands of a special master named to go through the material taken in the unprecedented raid on Mar-a-Lago. The DOJ, they don't want this special master to see the classified stuff. That's just for them. They want to control the information. They don't want the special master to see it. They certainly don't want Donald Trump to have it. They just want to sit on it like they did the laptop, like they did Bob Alinsky's phones. He hands over all the information. And then, as Bob Alinsky said there at the top of the show, I don't know what they did with it or where it is. And it's the same that when asked about the laptop, you've got all these DOJ FBI reps saying, we can't really reveal where the laptop is. They can't even say that they have the the evidence. It says here, the Trump camp has asked that the special master be given until January to finish his work. The Justice Department wants him to finish quickly so that an investigation into Trump can wrap up before the election. See, the DOJ wants to get right on with it, so hey, send out the indictments. Let's get the bad orange man in jail. It says, Trump claims the Mar-a-Lago documents have been declassified while he was president. The appeal to the Supreme Court now invites the nation's highest court, listen to this, it invites the nation's highest court to wade into the historically anomalous raid of a former president's home. So now you see the Supremes have an opportunity to weigh in on this, this persecution of a political opponent. It'll be interesting. We'll certainly keep our eyes on that story as it develops. One final story I'll just fly through if I can. Victor Davis Hanson, another great piece over at, I forget the name that he writes for, American Greatness, I believe. The Thinnest Veneer of Civilization. And this article talks about how the, really, the radical left, the communist left, is removing everything that brought stability to the United States. And this is important, again, because of the Antiochus spirit of fundamentally transforming everything. And so what we're seeing is any pillars of stability left are just being dismantled and torn down like statues of Thomas Jefferson. It says here, civilization is fragile. It hinges on ensuring the stuff of life. It says to be able to eat, to move about, to have shelter, to be free from state or tribal coercion, to be secure abroad and safe at home, only that allows cultures to be freed from the daily drudgery of mere survival. It says civilization alone permits humans to pursue sophisticated scientific research, the arts, and the finer aspects of culture. It says, so the great achievement of Western civilization, consensual government, individual freedom, rationalism in partnership with religious belief, free market economics, and constant self-critique and audit was to liberate people from daily worry over state violence, random crime, famine, and an often unforgiving nature. It says further on, but so often the resulting leisure and affluence instead deluded arrogant Western societies into thinking that modern man no longer needed to worry about the fruits of civilization he took to be his elemental birthright. We've just had it so good for so long that we just thought, well, remove all restraint, throw caution to the wind, everything will be fine, we'll just keep prospering, we'll keep becoming more powerful, more influential as a nation. And yet look at all these pillars of stability in the United States. It says, when stripped away, we are relearning that what lies just beneath is utterly terrifying. You take away the foundation, you take away the strength of the nation, and I'll just more specifically say the traditional family. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. But you remove that solid foundation, and everything falls apart. It's a greater threat. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, said that the breakdown, the total breakdown of the family posed a greater threat to our nations than an actual hydrogen bomb. And he was right. He was right. That's from Victor Davis Hanson. The Thinnest Veneer of Civilization. When we come back, we'll continue with our study on why marriage and why family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to request any literature that we draw attention to on this program, the 800 number is 1-866-930-3024. The email address, if you'd like to give us some feedback, hopefully we'll have time at the end of the show to go through some of that. That would be td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes, Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing. And it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
In our last subject, or our last study on the subject of why marriage and family, I took you through Revelation 19, where it says that the bride of Jesus Christ, that would be the church of God today, it says that the bride has made herself ready, ready for the marriage. This is what my father writes in the Ezekiel booklet. He says, Christ's wife must be ready when he returns. We are now to be preparing for that fabulous marriage, which Christ looks upon as already being consummated. That's why we're called his wife, not his fiance. It says we must think about this marriage as our husband does. It's extremely urgent that we get ready to be Christ's wife for all eternity. So this spiritual reality, this purpose and plan of God, this is why we even have marriage and family to begin with. You can go back to Genesis 2. And see where, well, even before that, Genesis 1, it talks about God making the male and female. He created the sex system in human beings. He created the genders, two of them, not 28 or 70, male and female. And then he instituted marriage there at the end of Genesis 2. Notice what it says here in Ephesians 5. This is the Apostle Paul's epistle. Verse 22 of Ephesians, it says, Ephesians 5, it says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Just like the church would do it to Jesus Christ. That's the pattern. Verse 23, it says, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the savior of the body. And so a husband, a loving husband, is the savior of the body, the family, the marriage, the leader. It says in verse 24, therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. It says to the husbands in verse 25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. What a sacrifice. I mean, he sacrificed his own life for the wife, for the church. I noticed on Tucker last night, too, he had this ad for The End of Men. I'm sure that's going to be a pretty good documentary as well. He talked about things even on the physical level, just the decline in testosterone among men. We're just turning into wimps. Verse 26, it says, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So here is a wife who's prepared. She is prepared to marry Jesus Christ. And again, you see Christ in the church. I mean, we often look at Ephesians 5 and say, well, that's the marriage chapter, and here's how we want to apply it to our physical marriages and families. And for sure, we want to do that. But in six straight verses, Jesus Christ is mentioned. So Paul is saying, now, here is the model. Here is the ultimate reality. This is what you're setting your minds on above all. That coming marriage between Jesus Christ and the church. Down in verse 31, notice it says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife. It says, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery. But I speak, Paul says, I speak concerning Christ and the church. It's a great mystery in this world. They don't understand why marriage or that God is a family. You want to get into that study. Here it is. Mystery of the ages. Why should this be a mystery? It's because Satan has blinded the minds of man to this ultimate reality, this precious truth of God. This is the heart of the gospel. But Satan is a powerful being. He's blinded the minds of men. Read John 3. Read 2 Corinthians 4. Read Revelation 12. See just how powerful the devil is. Notice Matthew 12. We'll pick it up in the Gospel of Matthew here, an exchange that Jesus had with a number of people. I mean, you think about Jesus Christ. He died in his early 30s. He was never married in the flesh. He was a single man, and yet what a family builder he was, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Matthew 12 and verse 46, it says, "While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brothers stood without," or outside the crowd, "desiring to speak with him. And then one said unto him, Behold, your mother and your brethren stand outside, desiring to speak with you. But he," this is Jesus' response in verse 48, "he answered and said unto him that told him, Who is my mother? And who are my brethren?" Who actually is my family? Jesus responded. Verse 49, "And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples, and he said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of my Father, which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother." The people of God's church, the disciples of Christ, they are God's family. That's what Jesus was saying here. We are the spiritual family of God. Isaiah 66 talks about our birth coming upon this world. Suddenly, our birth into the family of God. Think about what Jesus was saying there. He looked to the actual family was just outside. And he looked to the crowd of disciples in front of him and he said, "You're my family. You're my brothers, you're my sisters, you're my mother." One big spiritual family, the family of God. Now, notice this in Matthew 22, a few pages over. This is Matthew 22, verse 25. It says, Now there were with us seven brethren, and the first, when he had married a wife, deceased, and having no issue, left his wife unto his brother. And it says likewise, verse 26, the second also, the third, unto the seventh. And it says, and last of all, the woman died also. Verse 28 says, therefore, in the resurrection, yeah, that's in the Bible too. There's quite a lot in the Bible. There was actually quite a lot about the resurrection in Queen Elizabeth's funeral a couple weeks ago. People read right over it, or they sing about it, and they still persist in this pagan belief or idea that when you die, you have an immortal soul that goes straight to heaven. The Bible teaching is that when you die, you're dead. You're in the grave. You decompose. And yet God preserves your human spirit for when the resurrection, and there's more than just one, but I could get into that study, I guess, at another time. In any event, the questioning here was that when this woman's resurrected, she had all these husbands. I mean, who is she going to be with in the kingdom of God? She can't stay with seven husbands. Verse 29, Jesus answered and said to them, "You do err, not knowing the scriptures, nor the power of God." I mean, this is Jesus Christ responding to these Pharisees, saying, "You don't really know the scriptures." Verse 30 says, "For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven." So there won't be, on the spiritual level, in the spiritual realm, there won't be marriage between individual beings, not like we see in the physical realm today. But there will be marriage in the spiritual realm. That marriage, one marriage, is between Jesus Christ and the church. We just read about it in Ephesians 5. I gave it to you last time in Revelation 19 and verse 7. So what is Christ getting at here? He's just simply pointing out that the whole reason we go through this exercise or that we have these institutions in the physical realm is because God ordained them from the very beginning to point us to the spiritual reality, to help us set our minds on the spiritual marriage between Christ and the church. All of that, God's purpose and plan, the fact that God is a family is why he instituted the family relationship from the very beginning. That's awesome to think about. Man's incredible human potential is the sole reason that we even have marriage and family life today. It's all meant to help us orient our minds to that ultimate spiritual reality. This is a quote from our series in the Bible story. It says, in his commenting on Matthew 22, what we just read here, it says, Jesus knew the scriptures. He knew that God created human beings, male and female, so that they could marry, have children, and learn about the God family. It says, when God's saints are resurrected, however, they will not be physical beings again. They will be spirit beings in God's family. See, spirit beings married to Christ in God's family. So there's not going to be, you know, this woman with the seven husbands that she had in the flesh. She's not going to have to choose between the seven. It's all about marrying Jesus Christ and building the family of God. That, as I say, is from our Bible story. It says in verse 31, but as touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. He's the God. They're going to live again. How? By a resurrection from the dead. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. God is the God of the living. Verse 33, and when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine. They were astonished by this teaching. The Bible story says, once again, the people who heard Christ were shocked as they spoke to one another in the crowded streets and establishments of Jerusalem. They marveled at how this man from Nazareth, who was neither a priest, nor a scribe, nor a lawyer, nor a Pharisee, nor a Sadducee, was powerfully and truthfully answering the most controversial political and religious questions that people had struggled with for years. How precious it is to receive, to be the recipients of God's truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. God will open your mind to this truth, as I say. Order Mystery of the Ages. Make this your oncoming winter study or fall study. The toll-free number, it's free if you, even the call, if you make the call in the United States, Canada, or the Caribbean, it's 1-866-930-3024. Herbert Armstrong wrote back in 1985, he asked where this breakdown in family life is taking us, or he stated that. What about this family breakdown? Where is it leading our nation? You see, you go back to Victor Davis Hanson's piece. I mean, those pillars of stability, when they're gone, what does that mean for the nation? What does that mean for our people? Mr. Armstrong said, God is a kingdom. This ties in with everything I've given to you these last couple studies. All these scriptures we've read from Jesus, from the Apostle Paul, Moses, if you go back to Genesis 1 and 2. It says, God is a kingdom. That is the supreme divine family that rules the universe. It says the whole gospel, which Jesus Christ brought from God for mankind, is the good news of the coming kingdom of God. It says, and the united, closely knit, together family of Christians, the church, will at the coming of Christ and the time of the resurrection become the kingdom of God. It says the kingdom of God starts with a family relationship. First, the physical human families. Second, the one compacted together church. And finally, when the church is changed to immortality, the God family, which is the kingdom of God. It's a glorious study that you should delve into. And it understands, or rather makes it clear to our understanding, it opens our minds to understand that this is why we even have family in the flesh. So the idea is to bring God into the middle of your marriage and family, to build for God so that we can prepare for our future in God's family. Psalm 127 says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes but in vain. Later on in the psalm, it talks about how children are a blessing from God. Such a wonderful blessing and gift, marriage and family. And yet you look at how it's being destroyed today. And no wonder it's such a big target. Satan knows about this ultimate spiritual reality. He knows where this is all leading. And so he's doing everything he can to destroy family on every level. The physical family, the church family, the God family. God's purpose, though, shall stand. We'll conclude with a few emails that have come in over the past few weeks. These first few are actually from the last 24 hours mostly in response to Richard Palmer's show yesterday. The first one says, thank you for being the example of a man with backbone. Soon all the Republicans and even the Democrats will see strength backed by limitless power, founded in unfathomable love. It says, may our great God and Father soon send his eternal helpmeet to marry his bride. Yes, it's coming. And it's coming soon. The marriage between Jesus Christ and the church. This one here comes from Pennsylvania. It says, Mr. Palmer's program for filling in on the Day of Atonement was awesome. Please send thanks. And here again, the name of that show, Secrets of Hitler's Mountain Fortress. It plays more like a documentary, so if you have time over the coming days to go back and view that, I know you'll enjoy it. This one here says, just wanted to say that Mr. Palmer's show this day was wonderful, enlightening about Hitler, Austria, and the whole Roman Empire. It says the pictures he took on holiday when he was in Austria are breathtaking. It brought back some happy memories for me and my parents when I was there in Austria, Germany, and Switzerland in the mid-1970s. It says Austria was breathtaking, especially the gardens that Mr. Palmer showed where Julie Andrews and the children were in the movie The Sound of Music. We've visited that garden as well there in Salzburg. The whole area, though, from Vienna over to Salzburg and back, just beautiful and glorious in so many ways. It says, we did not visit Hitler's eagle's nest or the remains of a concentration camp in Germany. I rather wanted to see happy things such as the Alps, the castles. It says the beauty is absolutely astounding there in all these countries, especially Austria. It continues saying the beauty of the countryside and forests and the mountains hides the ugly evil described as the final solution of Hitler and the Nazis, and makes one cringe that so many people around the world, including shows like Newsmax and Fox, that everything is fine with Milani, that's the new leader in Italy, and so on. It's interesting, he kind of touches on this here, but there, in so many of the most physically beautiful places on Earth, you just see the devil and his minions carrying out these evil atrocities. I mean, even cities that used to be beautiful are very much turning into slums and crime-infested cities just because of our sins. But you leave that aside, you look at a place like San Francisco, just a beautiful city on a harbor there. But look at what comes out of that city. Look at what that city produces. Look at the filth, literally and in the spiritual sense as well. It says here, just to complete this email, it says, if I did not get the Trumpet magazine or watch the Trumpet Daily Show or the Key of David, I would be as blind as others I know that are just not connecting the dots on what is really happening in Italy now and soon in Germany again. It says, keep doing what you're doing because your voice is the only voice I'm listening to. So the pressure is on our staff to produce. This one here says, just wanting to say thank you for Mr. Palmer's program on the Day of Atonement. I'm so thankful that God gave him those experiences in Austria and Germany and inspired his thinking about the powerful connections to his words in the Bible. It says, I know that for all of you, efforts are tireless. I was glad to hear he got to hike and have some enjoyment all the while. What's more, surely God gave it to him so that he could give it to all of us. The program was a great gift, super well done, and of high quality. It was more like a highly engaging documentary. Nice comments, again, all the way around, coming in response to Richard's message from yesterday, The Secrets of Hitler's Mountain Fortress. This one here says the documentary gives incredible insight and considerable depth into the Nazis going then and being now underground, how Gutenberg looks for people to come to him today, just as Hitler did then, and how the blood-soaked legacy of Charlemagne is yet again increasingly yearned for by sophisticated and cultured Europeans in hopes of reviving the so-called Holy Roman Empire one final time. Definitely one of the best ever TDs. Great, great response there. This one here says, I've been meaning to write to you for some time now after today's program. This is in response to one we had a few days ago. After today's program, I didn't want to delay any longer. It seems each day's TD programs grows more powerful. The Bible studies are always on time. I can't help but to express my admiration for how you continue fighting to speak the truth and to get this message out. It says here, it can seem like you're repetitive when you speak on our nation, the current administration, and the shameful events taking place, but truly, truly it's impressive. The boldness and courage you display and motivating and the power behind it is obvious. I'm encouraged to not give up, but to keep fighting, as well as, most importantly, to seek that same power in my life. He writes, I believe that I'm not the only one who feels this way. Actually, I think that you have an impact on others in the major media, even those you refer to. You set the bar, and I'm sure they're watching and even ordering America under attack. You talked about Spokesman Club in a previous program and mentioned how some of the reporters and journalists can use it, you know, use more of that passion and fire, as I said. It says here, you may have been referring to someone in particular. Nevertheless, they see you're not some weird end of times talking evangelist out of the middle of nowhere. It says, between your example and also being moved by the ceremonies and traditions surrounding Queen Elizabeth's funeral, I too want to be laser focused on our royal potential and seek and display godly standards in my life. It says, finally, I regretfully got distracted and lost my way, but I know God is working with me to get me back on track. It says, one way is the daily program. He uses you to motivate me and others in the outer court like me. I can't wait to be reunited with the family of God and to join you in the fight to warn and to prepare for the return of Jesus Christ. It says, finally, you're in my prayers, and I wish you all an amazingly wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. So hopefully this individual gets right back on track spiritually and connects with God's family sooner rather than later. One last one here says, I'm writing to thank you for your courage to speak truth to power. I pray often for God's blessing and protection for both you and for our Pastor General, Gerald Fleury. I've been exceedingly grateful for God's love in having introduced me to both the Trumpet and the Key of David programs. I was raised as a Christian, but never knew the truth until I began to listen and to watch the sermons and programs delivered by the Philadelphia Church of God. I only began to hear and believe the truth when I first heard the testimony from Herbert W. Armstrong, and after that, from the Key of David program hosted by your father. Thank you again for your zeal in representing our true God. Well, thank you and all of you that send in comments from time to time. If you'd like to submit an email, some feedback to the show, you can write us td@thetrumpet.com. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on our program today, and we'll see you again next time.